So we're going to have a reading, which is from John chapter 2. We're looking at a series over the summer of Jesus' miracles, and today is turning the water into wine at Cana. And this is a story that many of us will be really familiar with, and I just wonder, part of me is thinking, you know, just as you listen to this, what does this story say to you? Not what this story says to me, but what does it say to you? And kind of half thinking that it would be great if this could be an interactive kind of a little time to think about this story. Maybe that's not a good idea. Maybe you'd be too shy to say something. But maybe you wouldn't. And just as you're reading this story, think about what this is saying to you, what God is saying to you through this passage. This passage has got so many things to say. It's a million different ways you could look at it. But what is this passage saying to us, to you this morning? And maybe that would be good to talk about that and share it together. And if you've no ideas, I'll tell you what I was thinking. But maybe you've got some. So thank you, Robert.
And the third day, there was a marriage in Cana of Galilee. And the mother of Jesus was there. And both Jesus was called and his disciples to the marriage. And when they wanted wine, the mother of Jesus said unto him, "They have no wine." Jesus said unto her, "Woman, what have I to do with thee? Mine hour is not yet come." His mother said unto the servants, "Whatsoever he says unto you, do it." And there were set there 6 water pots of stone, after the manner of the purifying of the Jews, containing 2 or 3 firkins apiece. Jesus said unto them, "Fill the water pots with water." And they filled them up to the brim. And he said unto them, "Draw out now and bear unto the governor of the feast." And they bare it. When the ruler of the feast had tasted the water that was made wine, and knew not whence it was, but the servants which drew the water knew, the governor of the feast called the bridegroom and said unto him, "Every man at the beginning sets forth good wine, and when men have well drunk, then that which is worse. But thou hast kept the good wine until now." This beginning of miracles did Jesus in Cana of Galilee, and manifested forth his glory, and his disciples believed on him.
So as we read through that passage that you'll know really well in John chapter 2, was there anything that stood out for you? Was there something, a verse that you thought, that means that, or that speaks to me, or I find that relevant to me where I am today, or how I'm feeling today, or to the church today? Is there anything you'd like to share? We're in a small group of us this morning. So it's like one big family. And if you've got an insight, let me encourage you to share it. Is there anything in particular struck you from that? Or you didn't understand from that? Or you thought, that's exciting from that? It's good to see you all looking at the Bible. That's brilliant. That's a good start, isn't it? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's brilliant. A lovely insight. It is a gift, isn't it? It's kind of different. You know, nobody's sick. Nobody's hungry. It is a pure gift. It is a happy occasion. In fact, some commentators think, why would Jesus bother doing a miraculous sign at such an occasion? He's not making someone live. He's not making someone dance. He's simply giving a gift. That's a great way to look at it. And how he blesses, and indeed most weddings you go to refers to this passage, how Jesus blessed that wedding just by his very presence and what he did. And maybe that says something very deep about marriage, not only about marriage as we know it, but Jesus being the bridegroom and the church being the bride. There's now lots of ramifications about that. There's a whole picture of that in this passage, that Jesus is the real bridegroom and that we, his church, are the real bride, and that there will be, in fact, we're going to be anticipating it as we take communion very soon, anticipating that marriage feast of the Lamb. That's what it will be. It is a wedding. It is a marriage. And that's true that this first miraculous sign should be done in such a place. Great. Very good. Good start. Any other little? It doesn't need to be really profound. You might think, oh, mine's very simple. I like some. Ruth, that's brilliant. Absolutely. Yes. The way Jesus responded to it, you know, when Mary said they run out of wine and he said, hey, my time has not yet come, but the word is my hour has not yet come. And that's a very important word in this gospel. The hour of Jesus was looking forward to the death of Jesus again that we're going to be thinking about. His hour had come. It's going to be a very important act. In fact, that's why he came to die. And that's why the impression that he came to the wedding with some of his disciples, just there to enjoy it. It was probably a big village occasion, and everybody was there. It was going to last for days. His mum might have been one of the movers and shakers. Maybe that's one of the organizers who knew that they'd run out of wine. She was one of the ladies making tray bakes and things like that. And that is true. And Jesus said, why are you coming to me? But he was ready for it, wasn't he? He was ready to do what needed to be done. And that is true. God gives us opportunities every day. We wake up in the morning, we think it's going to be routine, but we just don't know who we're going to encounter. And it's being aware of that, just as Ruth says, that we are the hands and feet of God. We are his representatives. We are his ambassadors. That's what we're there to do, to speak his words of truth, to bring his, to be a servant like he was a servant, but just to be ready and expectant of that. And who knows what opportunities God will give us as we live expectantly. Yeah, this is really good. I mean, at best, running out of wine was just a kind of a social embarrassment. Because it's not good to run out of stuff if you're having a wedding or whatever. Down in Arklow, they had a barbecue a couple of weeks ago, and they were expecting 30-something people. And so I suppose they were catering kind of for that, and 150 people turned up. So that is amazing. I said, how did you manage? They said, we managed to eat. But you can imagine walking around to all the leaders saying, don't eat anything. But they managed to do that, you know. So this was, you know, kind of a best, a kind of social embarrassment. It wasn't a life and death situation. And yet, nothing is too, as you say, Debbie, insignificant in God's eyes. You know, we can ask him for anything. The amazing thing is that he is interested in the little tiddly things and the great big ginormous things that we think are just too big. But he encourages us to bring everything to him. Everything. Our praise, our thanks, the little things that worry us and upset us, the major things to do with the world or the church or our health or our family or whatever it might be. Everything. Everything is important. Didn't Jesus say, not even a sparrow falls to the ground without God knowing about it? So how much more important than you? He knows how many hairs are in your head, Brian. He knows how many days we're going to live. He knows everything about us. So we must, you know, nothing is too small. That is brilliant. Yeah, obedience is key, isn't it? That's one of the things here, just marrying you, you know. And that's true whenever the wine runs out. Whatever that represents in our lives, whenever that's gone, what do we do when we're empty? Where do we go? Well, the place we should always go, of course, is to our Lord Jesus, because he's the one that can change things. He can do anything. Just do whatever he tells you, she told the servant. I think that was great. He says, why are you involving me? My hour has not yet come. I said, just do whatever he tells you. And off she went. Isn't it lovely to be able to pray like that? To be able to leave it, you know? So how many times do we pray and we bring it to God and we take it away from him again? And we still worry about it. We're still burdened by it. And we bring it back and we take it back to ourselves instead of just leaving it. Peter says, cast all your cares on him. Throw them at him because he cares for you. Just leave them. He can do it. He's got a sust. I know in our own lives when we think about it, I think about many things in my own life, about the life of my family, things that can concern you and you're trying to work them out. But actually to trust him and say, Lord, I know you're trustworthy. And Mary knew that. She knew him. And do whatever he does. Whatever he tells you to do, just do it. Very simple, isn't it? Whatever he says, do it. So simple. So hard. But so effective. This is really good. Any other thoughts? That's right. Yeah, Jesus was doing something new, wasn't it? Wasn't he? Those 6 stone jars that were as you say, used for ceremonial washing. The priests would have washed before they did their duties, and it was just a way of saying we recognize we're unclean, we recognize that we're sinners. This was a ceremonial way of identifying that, of saying, I am unclean, and when I come before a holy God, I need to do something. And yet God, Jesus, was doing something brand new. He was taking these things that were for this particular use, and he was saying, I'm changing everything. Everything is changing. The way to come to God is going to be brand new. These things to make you clean, I'm going to fill them with wine. And this is about joy. There's lots of people who don't come to church. Lots of people who think about God and they think, boring. Or someone who says, don't do that. Don't enjoy yourself. Come to me and I'll make your life dull. But Jesus is saying, come to me and we'll have a party. Come to me and taste the best wine you have ever tasted. That's what's happening here. Jesus is doing something new. New wine was going to require new wineskins. Everything was new because Jesus was here. This is great. Any other thoughts? That's right. You want somebody special? Back in chapter 1, towards the end of chapter 1, as Jesus is calling his disciples, there's the man called Nathanael. And if you read that beginning in verse 46, it's just great because Philip says to Nathanael, I think we'll find someone, Nazareth. And Nathanael says, can anything good come out of Nazareth? You know, so he's this kind of cynical look. But within the space of four verses, 46, 47, 48, 49, by the time you get to number 49, he's saying, wow, you are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel. So from being cynical to being faith-filled, only took a short time. And Jesus says, you believe because I told you something. Something supernatural, but you are going to see so much more. This is the beginning, only the beginning. You are going to see amazing things. And Nathanael saw two things. He saw that Jesus was not just a good teacher or a good man, but he was the Son of God. And he could also see what he was. He was the King of Israel. And Jesus said to him, you are a true Israelite. Here is someone that is a true Israelite. There's nothing false within them. And the day is full of where we bring our own ego or our own agenda. In an era of fake news, there was nothing fake about Nathanael. Here is in whom there is nothing false. Nothing. It would not be lovely for Jesus to say that to you and to me. Here is someone who's just genuine, open, honest, true, searching. That is a beautiful thing. A true Israelite. So much you could say around that whole thing as well about what is Israel. Not just being a Jew, not just being born into a Jewish family, but you and I who believe in Jesus, who have faith in God, are true Israelites, children of Abraham. That's what makes us children of God. That's what makes us true Israelites, having our faith in Jesus. And here is someone who was a true Israelite. And he was able to say to Jesus, you are the King of Israel. Which I think is great. When we think about authority in our world today, even when we think about Brexit and Theresa May was meeting with her cabinet to try to come to some kind of consensus to the way forward, some kind of negotiating position, but God doesn't work like that. He's a king. He makes the rules. He doesn't go with what is trendy today or what we think. He says it as it is because he knows us. He knows what's best, so he sets the rules. He's the king. And actually this miracle is going to work that out for the people so that everyone, you and I, can see that Jesus is the Son of God, that Jesus is the King of Israel. Yeah, this is really good. Any other little thoughts, points? That's exactly right. Jesus always gives the best. It could have been ordinary. I don't drink wine, so I don't know anything about wine. But this was the best, according to the Master of Ceremonies. Saved the best to last. And that's exactly why Jesus gives the best. Often in the world, we're satisfied with something less than the best. The idea of wine through the Bible is a picture of joy. You know, taste and see that the Lord is good. Or Isaiah, come freely and buy wine and buy milk. It'll cost you nothing. This idea of abundance and this idea of good things. But wine's got that picture of joy throughout the scriptures. But the joy that Jesus gives, the wine that Jesus gives, when we're empty, when we're run out, when we've tried all the rest, this is the best. Jesus always gives the best. Someone said to me, or many people said to me, you know, I suppose the best scenario is to live your life your own way, and then before you die, just before you die, you become a Christian, you go to heaven. And sometimes we think like that, don't we? We think the world is a good, really good, it's got so much to offer. This is really good. And then we'll save Jesus for a Sunday, or we'll save Jesus for our deathbed. But that's just saying that Jesus doesn't give the best, and that's a lie. Jesus is the best. To know God, what could be better? To have hope and to have purpose and to have eternity, what could be better? Jesus always gives the best. I like that. That's good. Yes. Something about waiting. We're not very good at waiting in our culture, are we? Don't like to wait. I don't like to wait. Don't like queues of any sort. And it's like that for all of us, isn't it? But there is something about waiting. You know, we sing that Christmas carol, late in time, behold him come, offspring of a virgin's womb. But Jesus wasn't late. Jesus was right on time. Or we're waiting for Jesus to return. Or think, I wish he'd hurry up, but he will come at the very right moment, at the very right time. And with God, it's always like that. We can trust him. We can trust him to get the timing right. Any other thoughts? Isaiah 55, come all you who are thirsty, come to the waters, and you who have no money, come buy and eat. Come buy wine and milk without money and without cost. And then the great verse 2 in this says, why spend money on that which is not bread, and your labor on that which does not satisfy? Listen carefully to me and eat what is good, and your soul will delight in the richest of foods. God says to us, why do we spend our time chasing after the wind? Things that we think are going to satisfy but never do. Always disappoint. Why would you do that? No, come to him. Come to God. Come to Jesus. Come to the best. The one who loves you like no one else ever could love you. The one who gave his life for you. The one who offers eternity to you. The one who gives us his spirit. Isn't that amazing? The one who can take the ordinary and make it extraordinary. And we're all ordinary. But each of us can be a child of God. Maybe there's someone here today who is not a child of God in that sense, a true Israelite in that sense, not a Christian, have never really committed themselves to Jesus. And how can you have this good wine in your life? Well, it's just recognizing that without him we're empty. The wine has run out. I've got nothing. And then Jesus can fill us with good wine, the best wine, true joy. And we can taste and see all these sensory kind of things. Our faith is not simply an intellectual exercise. It is sensational. It touches all our senses. We can hear him. We can see him. We can taste him. This is real. This is really living.